is University of Maryland Professor Michael Spivey. Professor Spivey is a lecturer in the Department of Government and Politics, teaching courses in public law, law and society, and the U.S. Constitution. A graduate of the University of Chicago with a master's degree in public policy and Georgetown University Law Center, he's been a lawyer for the past 25 years, representing clients before Congress in administrative agencies and state capitals. As a result of his experience, he's been able to see up close the impact money has on politics. Our next panelist is United States Congressman John Sarbanes. Congressman Sarbanes has served Maryland's 3rd Congressional District, spanning portions of Anne Arundel County, Baltimore City, Howard County, and Montgomery County in the United States Congress since 2007. He currently serves in the House Committee of Energy and Commerce. He's committed to reducing the influence of the wealthy and well-connected in politics, and to this end, he has authored the Government by the People Act, which aims to empower everyday Americans by elevating their voices in Congress with a tax credit and matching fund. Our next panelist is United States PERC Director Dan Smith. As Democracy Campaign Director, Smith coordinates federal and state-level campaigns to curb the corrosive effects of big money in our democracy, including U.S. PERC's Democracy for the People campaign to amplify the voices of ordinary citizens through the small donor campaign finance system. Our final panelist is former Montgomery County Councilman Phil Andrews. Andrews is a former Executive Director of Common Cause Maryland and served on the Montgomery County Council for 16 years, chairing the Public Safety Committee for 14 years, and serving as the President of the Council from 2008 to 2009. He was the chief sponsor of Montgomery County's public financing system for county elections, unanimously passed last fall. He currently serves as the Director of Crime Prevention Initiatives for the State's Attorney's Office of Montgomery County. Thank you all for being here. Now, before our first panelist, I remember, please write down any questions you may have. And now for Professor Spivey.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be with you tonight and certainly distinguished company. So glad I could join you. I see a lot of my students out here. I do want to clarify there is no extra credit. Let me start. My job is actually pretty straightforward. My job is to give you some context and parameters. And I'm going to talk about Citizens United. I'm going to talk about McCutcheon. I'm going to end with what we can't do. And then I'm going to turn it over to our panelists to talk about what you can do in light of those cases. We now, as a result of those two decisions, Congress and other elected bodies are much more restricted in the way they can go about dealing with the problem of money in politics. And so I want to try to give you some context and background with respect to that. Let me start by amplifying this point regarding money in politics, with just a little data in addition to that which you've already heard this evening. First of all, in 1982, candidates for Congress combined spent $343 million getting elected or trying to get elected. By comparison, in 2010, that number was $1.8 billion, a 525% increase over that period of time. If you go back and look at the rate of inflation during that period, I guarantee you it is not a cumulative 525%. So a rapid growth in the amount of money. In the wake of Citizens United, which unleashed a torrent of money for outside groups, the spending jumped to $294.2 million in 2010 from the previous election, almost a 400% increase in 4 years, almost as much as the 20 years that preceded that. But lest you think there's only money in campaigns, let's not forget lobbying. But there's a lot of money spent there as well. Corporations spend on average about 13 times the amount of money on lobbying than they actually spend on campaigns or for outside groups. In 2013, to 14, corporations spent about $380 million through PACs on campaigns. By comparison, they spent $5.2 billion on lobbyists to affect legislative outcomes. So there's a lot of money. But maybe, even though there's a lot of money, it doesn't matter all that much. I actually did a calculation, and if you take the total amount of spending in the last cycle, divided by the total population, It actually comes out to only about $16 a person. Doesn't sound like a whole lot. Even if we forget those under 18, it's still only about double that. So maybe this is not a lot of money when we look at it from that perspective. But we also need, as a couple of our previous speakers have said, to look at where the money comes from. It's not as though there are $30 coming from everyone over the age of 18 in this country. It actually comes from a very small number of people, as you've heard. Only 10% of Americans give to political campaigns. 0.5% of campaign contributions of Americans fund over half of all political campaigns in this country. Let me say that again. 0.5% of Americans fund the majority of campaigns. The great majority of Americans, the 99%, are not participating monetarily in elections. Now, Bob Dole, 20 years ago, said that poor people don't give money to campaigns, and he was very much correct about that. Apparently now, though, this has become a much bigger problem. Even the rich are feeling the pressure. There was an article in the Washington Post 3 days ago that now only the super rich are attracted to those seeking office. Only the merely rich don't get called anymore. There was a bundler who was quoted. She raised $1 million for George W. Bush, and she said, "It's so sad. No one calls us anymore. We're just not important." Well, imagine what the rest of the folks feel like. Even with all that, even with that data, maybe your reaction is, well, so what? There's a lot of money. It's given by a few people, but maybe the legislative outcomes are still okay. Maybe our democracy is healthy. Maybe that just doesn't matter. Well, at the risk of those who are elected officials, and you probably know this already, but let me tell you what all that means in terms of trust in our democracy. 75% of Americans believe that campaign contributions buy results in Congress. And it's not a partisan issue. 71% of Republicans agree with that statement. 81% of Democrats. So a lot of people believe that money matters, and in a negative way in terms of politics. Only 22% of Americans today say that they trust government most of the time. By comparison, in 1970, that percentage was 70%. Now granted, we didn't have this thing called Watergate after that, and there are a few other revelations that bring some discredit on our elected government, but still, that's a dramatic decline in trust in government during that period of time. Here's what Justice Kennedy said in Citizens United. "The appearance of influence or access will not cause the electorate to lose faith in our democracy." Now, I pondered that statement a lot. And the only way that I can make sense of that statement is that the electorate had already lost faith in our democracy, and so there really wasn't anything the Citizens United could do to make the situation worse. With the exception of that explanation, it doesn't make a lot of sense. So let's talk about Citizens United for just a moment. What did Citizens United do and say? What's its import? Well, on the surface, quite frankly, it's not a terribly interesting or important case. It involved Hillary the movie on pay-per-view. If you look at the basic facts, it doesn't seem terribly consequential. If you look at the reasoning, however, of Citizens United, it becomes one of the most important, if not the most important case in the Roberts Court. What did it say? It said that corporations have a right to spend an unlimited amount of money promoting or opposing a candidate through independent expenditure. Unlimited amount. As we saw, those expenditures have increased dramatically. That case was followed by a case called McCutcheon, in which then the court said you can't impose aggregate limits on contributions. So now we've taken limits off of corporations for independent expenditure. We've taken limits off in terms of what you can give to candidates, sky is the limit now. But more troubling even than that is the reasoning of the cases, because what does Citizens United do? It says that there are now limited reasons, limited justifications for elected officials to try to restrict the flow of money and the importance of money in politics. First, quid pro quo, corruption. That's the reason that you can justify limitations. And but for quid pro quo, we're going to lessen your ability to restrict campaign contributions. Government can't equalize speech. It can't seek to correct distortions in the market. Now think about that for a moment. A PAC buys up, if they have unlimited funds, they buy up every hour of airtime 3 months before an election, and only that message gets out. Is that the way we think our democracy should work? Citizens United actually allows that. Again, Justice Kennedy, influence is not corruption, and only corruption is a valid reason for Congress to regulate campaign expenditure. In closing, what I want to suggest, borrowing from Professor Lawrence Lessig, is that the court really got this significantly wrong. They just didn't understand the nature of the corruption that is at issue. More than that, for originalists and textualists who believe in reading the plain language of the Constitution, to read in now that the First Amendment only governs quid pro quo corruption seems entirely inconsistent with the theory. But that's a bigger topic, and you can come take 432, and I'll talk about it at nauseam. The point here is that there is another kind of corruption, what Lessig calls dependency corruption, where someone does something for you, and then you owe them, or at least you feel like you owe them, that you need to do something because they did something for you. It's like when a friend you don't know that well gives you a birthday present. Now you think, wow, what do? I give them one back? How much do I need to spend? How much was this one worth? There is an expectation that is created. And now, under Citizens United, we can't do much directly about that kind of corruption. We're left with the question, what do we want? Do we want a democracy, or do we want a plutocracy? Citizens United says that the regulatory regime that we have had since the 1970s now is no longer valid, is no longer constitutionally good. And so we must replace it with something. I'm going to suggest that this is actually an opportunity. It's an opportunity to use carrots, not sticks, to get more people involved in democracy and to shame those who want to spend all of their resources to fund the plutocrats to fund democracy, to shame them into no longer behaving that way. And the speakers that follow, I'm sure, will pick up on that point and have some good ideas. Thank you.
Thank you, Professor Spivey.
Good evening, everybody. So first of all, let me thank Marilyn Perry, thank Perry generally, and Dan, and all the leaders of the Perry movement, really, across the country. I had the opportunity in the last month to do an event with CalPERG out of Berkeley and TexPERG down in Austin, University of Texas at Austin. So PERG is definitely on the move when it comes to the issue of money in politics, and I congratulate them on all their great work. So my first question is, how many of you voted last November in the election? Okay, I believe you. Maybe not. But you're definitely outliers, because people in your demographic cohort are not voting anywhere near the levels that they should be, frankly, anywhere near the levels that you make the typical politician want to spend a lot of time with you, because the consultants tell you to follow the voters and pay attention to cohorts that vote. And unfortunately, young people are among that demographic cohort that is not getting out as consistently on election day as they should. I congratulate everybody here who is engaged and basically fulfilling that basic citizenship obligation reasons, and there are many that are cited for why young people, millennials, X, Y, Z, whatever you are, why you're not coming out and voting on election day is you've decided that it doesn't really matter. That insiders run things in Washington, that big money calls the shots, and that no one's really paying attention to you anyhow. So you're making a rational judgment, right? I acknowledge that. You're making a rational judgment whether you're doing this consciously or you're doing it unconsciously. You're making the judgment that it doesn't really matter whether you go out and vote because somebody else is making the decisions based on dependence, as the professor said, on big money and special interest, and that your voice doesn't really matter. That's your perception. And I'm here to tell you that your perception is pretty much grounded in reality. I'm not going to fight against that. Because since I got to Congress in 2007, I've kind of made it my project to put on the night vision goggles that let you see the way the money flows through the system. And if you think money has undue influence in Washington, you're absolutely right. If you think the effect of it is to distort public policy so that too often that policy gets made for special interest and the power players out there and the elites and doesn't get made for the public, you're right. Why is this happening? Well, let me kind of bring it to brass tacks. I'm a member of Congress. I'm a candidate. Let's say you're a candidate and you want to run for Congress. According to the statistics and the data, you have to raise, in order to win, to compete and win, the average member of Congress has to raise $1.6 million in a two-year period to be successful. So where are you going to go to get that money? You're not going to go to your friends and peers. They don't have that kind of money. You're going to have to turn to the PACs and the big money donors and the special interests because they have that kind of money and they can dispense it quickly. But what happens is, the more you turn in that direction to fund your campaigns, the more dependent you become on that, and the more you tilt in that direction when it comes time to make the policy. And this isn't just happening to one member, or two members, or three members of Congress, or the candidates that run every 2 years. This, unfortunately, is happening to the entire institution. So the institution of Congress is leaning away from what everyday citizens want to see, and that is producing, I think, a deep, an increasingly desperate level of cynicism among the public, and that includes, I'm sure, people in this room. So what can we do about it? Well, it's very tough to put limits on money right now because this court, the Supreme Court, is running in the opposite direction. They've decided that money is speech and you can't contain speech, and therefore you can't contain money that is speech. So right now, that's a very difficult road to hoe. There is an effort to get a constitutional amendment, and I support that, but that's a long process. And at the end of the day, it's still a process that just has you refereeing what the big money crowd does. It doesn't do anything to pull everyday citizens into the solution. So I wanted to focus on that at the federal level, and Phil Andrews has done a brilliant job of focusing on it in Montgomery County. He's going to tell you about the bill that he worked for years to pass. And it was really a crowning achievement of his time on the Montgomery County Council that they supported that and passed it unanimously. So here's the idea. What if we could create another place for candidates to go to raise money for their campaigns? What if they didn't have to go to the big money sources, to the PACs and the special interests? What if they could go to everyday citizens, to average Americans who want to stand up and power their campaigns? So, right now, there's no way for a $25 or $50 donor to get the attention of a candidate who's running for Congress. Just not enough money. It doesn't make a difference. They might want to talk to you, but it's not worth their while to talk to you because they got to raise $1.6 million. They got to go spend their time with some lobbyists and some PACs and some big money donors. It's like that Verizon commercial where the guy's saying, "Can you hear me now? Can you hear me now?" The candidate cannot hear you if you are calling with a $50 donation. But what if you created a system that allowed small donors to get into the game by offering them a $25 tax credit? In other words, let's make it easier for everyday citizens to participate in the funding of campaigns. And then what if you said the candidates that did the right thing, who gave up PAC money, traditional PAC money, who limited the amount of high donations they took, who reached out and built a network of small donors, that candidates like that, when you make a small donation to them, they get a 6-to-1 match of public funds coming in behind them. All of a sudden now, when you call that candidate up, you're saying, I'm standing in my living room, I got 30 people here who are ready to give you $50 using their $25 tax credit. That's $1,500. And since you're a candidate that's qualified for the public match, you're going to get $9,000 matching funds on that. That's $10,500. The candidate will say, stay where you are, I'll be there in 20 minutes. That's the difference. But there is no system like that right now. You cannot raise the money you need to run for Congress in this country except by going to the special interest. We want to create a different place to go. We want to create a place to go where millions of Americans are sitting there, basically in the bleachers as spectators on their own democracy, saying, what about us? Don't we get to participate? Don't we have a role in our own democracy? That's what a small donor public matching system can do. That's what the Government by the People Act, H.R. 20, is all about. We introduced it last year. We reintroduced it this year. We have 150 co-sponsors in Congress. We have a national coalition, including PIRG and many other good government and reform organizations, but also including the NAACP, including environmental groups like LCB and Friends of the Earth and Greenpeace, labor groups, faith groups. Why? Because they figured out they can't get anything done in Washington as long as big money is standing in the way. So they're coming to the cause. They're joining the movement to create a different way of powering our campaign. So that's the promise of this, that you have a voice, that you can then make the rational judgment first to invest in a campaign because it'll matter to the candidate. And then because you believe that the candidate who wins, if they win being powered by the people, will keep listening to you and not get co-opted when they go to Washington, that's also a reason for you to go out and vote. Because then it matters. Then your voice can continue to be heard. So the promise of a system like this is it allows you to invest in candidates that are doing the right thing. It encourages you to get out there and vote. It makes you part of your democracy again. That's why I'm so focused on this, because I think this can begin. It's going to be a long path, but it can begin to restore the cynicism that people have. Does anybody here have an iPhone? 313131. If you text that, you put in the word people, 313131, we'll get a message back immediately that allows you to sign the petition for the Government by the People Act. We're trying to gather signatures all across the country to support this effort. 313131, put in the word people, and you'll go to petition to the Government by the People Act. Thank you all very much. Look forward to your questions.
Thank you, Congressman. My name is Dan Smith. I'm the Democracy Campaign Director for the U.S. Public Interest Research Group. I'd like to thank all of our panelists for being here, for Congressman Van Hollen, Congressman Sarbanes, former council member Phil Andrews, and Professor Spivey. PIRG, we're a federation of 27 state-based consumer advocacy organizations, and getting big money out of politics is critical to everything that we do. You heard Andrea talk a little bit about some of the victories that Maryland PIRG has won in the past, like getting toxic chemicals out of everyday products we use. What's keeping us from winning that at the federal level, the reason that isn't the law of the land, is because of how much power special interests have in our democracy. And so you've gotten a chance to hear about the flood of big money unleashed by the Citizens United and the McCutcheon decision. You've gotten the chance to hear about the Government by the People Act, which is a critical solution for curbing the influence of big money. What I wanted to talk about is the movement that has, the citizens' movement across the country that has begun to reclaim our democracy. Because although Citizens United did unleash a torrent of big money, it also sparked a citizens' movement across the country that is only growing as Americans realize that their voices are being drowned out by a narrower and narrower set of mega donors and special interests that have very different policy preferences than the average American. This past January marked the fifth anniversary of that decision, and already in those 5 years, 16 states and over 600 localities have gone on the record calling on Congress to pass a constitutional amendment to overturn Citizens United. On top of those states and counties, 5 million Americans have added their names to this campaign calling on Congress to pass a constitutional amendment. And on the fifth anniversary, over 130 advocacy organizations, ranging from labor to environmental groups, from civil rights groups like the NAACP, to small business groups and faith-based organizations, all signed a statement of unity principles calling for reform. Going state by state, city by city to pass resolutions overturning Citizens United is not an easy task, and it will not happen tomorrow. And meanwhile, the problem is only getting worse. I mean, to be at a point where the donor that can only raise $1 million is not getting called by a member of Congress. Increasingly, the pool of donors is getting narrower and narrower. And these donors get to essentially decide who gets to run for office, who is deemed a viable candidate. They set the parameters for what issues are acceptable to debate in the campaign. And then, of course, you know, at the end of the day, too often, these donors get to determine who wins. You heard Andrea talk about how we found that the top 32 donors to super PACs in 2012, giving an average of over $9 million each, were able to match all of the money given by every single small donor to the Obama and Romney campaign combined. So 32 people able to give just as much as 3.7 million Americans. And this is why we need the Government by the People Act. While Citizens United blocked us from setting reasonable limits on big money, what we can do is amplify the voices of small donors. We can encourage more Americans to participate in the process, and we can change the calculus for candidates and make it so if you're a grassroots candidate that is running with the support of small donors, you can actually compete with a big money candidate. Programs like these already exist in and are successful in states and localities across the country. So one example is New York City, which has had a system like this for several years, where in the 2013 city council race, over 60% of the contributions to candidates that participated in the small donor program came from small donors giving under $175. And 49 of the 51 winning candidates chose to opt into the system. So it's working well in New York City. And if we're gonna win the policy and pass the bill at the federal level, we need to win more at the state and local level. And so we need more supporters and champions. We need strong coalitions at the state and local level that bring together a diverse set of constituencies. And then we need local elected officials at all levels of government, from the local level up to members of Congress who are ready for and calling for reform. And this support is already building across the country. So you're going to hear next from former Montgomery County Councilman Phil Andrews about how we won this in Montgomery County last fall in 2014. Just this past February, voters in Chicago, which is a city that has a long history of being dominated by machine politics, voters approved an advisory ballot question calling to for the city and the state to create a small donor system. It won with nearly 80% of the vote. And then U.S. PERG and our state affiliates across the country have been working to get local elected officials to sign on in support of this policy. And since the fall, we've been able to get 200 local elected officials from across the country sign their name in support of a program like the Government by the People Act. So I'll close by saying we're at a very critical time in the fight to get big money out of politics and put regular people back in charge of our elections and our democracy, because we can't let a big money dominated system become the new normal that people are used to and are cynical about. So we're at a critical time right now, but it's also an incredibly exciting time because more people are getting involved than ever. Organizations representing a diverse set of constituencies that never used to really work on money in politics are now getting involved because they see how critical it is to every issue they work on. More Americans across the country, if you look at the polls of all political stripes, people get that money in politics is a problem that affects them. What we need to do now is mobilize those folks, educate them that there are solutions out there like the Government by the People Act, that we can win, you know, across the country at the state and local level and eventually build enough momentum to pass it at the federal level. So thank you, and I'll now turn over to Bill Andrews.
Thank you, and I want to thank Mary Perg as well for the great work in putting this together and for the excellent work that Mary Perg and Ms. Perg are doing to advance campaign finance reform. So we're talking about your government, which is why this is so important. And it is important to remember there are tens of thousands of governments in the United States. There's one federal government, there are 50 state governments, there are about 3,000 counties, and there are tens of thousands of municipalities. So you can make a difference in a lot of places. And then there are school boards as well, many of which are elected. So there are tens of thousands of governments in the United States. And there is hope on the horizon. Now, when a presidential candidate has to request that his donors limit their contributions to $1 million, you know that something is seriously wrong with American politics. But let's take the Supreme Court where they are right now, because we can't change the Supreme Court directly. So the Supreme Court is basically equating money and speech. Well then, if that's the game, let's amplify the voice of the average person. Let's amplify the voice of small donors. Let's give candidates, as Congressman Sarbanes said, the incentive to go after small donors by making them bigger donors through public financing. And that's what we have done in Montgomery County over a period of time. It took years. We had to get the authority from the General Assembly. That took 13 years to get the authority from the General Assembly to have the authority to enact campaign finance reform, public financing. And then it took a lot of work working with many groups like PERG, like Common Cause, the Sierra Club, the ACLU, the Young Democrats, Progressive Maryland, a strong coalition united in order to get this through. And so let me tell you for a couple minutes about how Montgomery County's public financing law works. Because it is a 21st century model. It's different than the presidential public financing system, which was set up after Watergate, and which has really declined over the years for a lot of reasons. And it's different than some of the other public financing systems around. First of all, it is a matching system. It is not a grant. A candidate has to qualify. So a candidate has to raise a certain number of contributions from small donors to qualify. In the case of the county council, if you are running in a county council district, which is about 200,000 people, you have to raise from at least 125 donors $10,000 in contributions of $150 or less. If you're running countywide, which is a county of about 1 million people, then you have to raise 250 contributions of $150 or less to total at least 20,000. So that gives you a sense of what you have to do. So what it does, because these are public funds, we felt it was important to have a qualifying threshold to show that you have to have some significant public support to get public money.
You don't have to have any support from wealthy individuals or PACs, but you've got to have those contributions from residents to count to qualify for public funds. If you accept public funds, you cannot accept any contributions from any other source. You cannot accept contributions from anybody other than an individual $150 or less. No money from PACs, no money from corporations, no money from unions, no money from either of the parties either. It's small donor oriented. We are empowering small donors with this system. And the amount that we empower them is substantial because it takes a $50 contribution and makes it a $250 contribution because there's a 4-to-1 match for the first 50. It takes a $100 contribution and makes it a $450 contribution because there's a 4-to-1 match for the first 50 and a 3-to-1 match for the second 50. And it takes a $150 contribution and makes it a $600 contribution because there's, again, a 4-to-1 match for the first 50, 3-to-1 match for the second 50, 2-to-1 match for the third 50. So it takes small donors and it empowers them. And it thus incentivizes candidates to chase the voters in their district and to chase small donors rather than big donors. Candidates respond to incentives. You have to give the right incentives to get the behavior you want. So this takes incentives that are currently wrong and encouraging, or however you look at it, the current incentives encourage people to go after big donors and special interest money and to ignore the average donor or the average person. We're giving the incentives for candidates to go after the small donors because there's a substantial reward for doing so. And if candidates do that, they can get up to $125,000 in matching public funds for a county council district race, $250,000 in matching public funds for a county council at large race, and $750,000 for a county executive race. And that is per primary and per general election. So those are based on historical averages with some inflation built in. And the whole thing is subject to an index to inflation as well. So that's the basic idea. Now, one wrinkle in this is there is no spending limit. The Supreme Court doesn't like spending limits. And we couldn't say that, because the Supreme Court threw out the Arizona law, which said that if a candidate who's in the public financing system is being outspent by a lot by someone who isn't, then they can raise more public funds. You can't do that anymore. So what we said was, well, if we're limiting contributions to $150, why do we need a spending limit? There's no corruption threat there, a $150 contribution, and we want to encourage people to go out and raise money from small donors. We're only going to match with public funds small donors who are residents of the county. We're not going to match contributions from Idaho with public funds, but you can raise contributions of $150 from individuals to your heart's content. And thus, if you're going up against someone who's wealthy and self-financing or raising a lot of money, you can at least keep up to some extent that way. But the public funds provide enough money so that you can run a viable campaign. This will open races up to a lot more people, people who don't need to rely or don't have wealthy donors or don't want to take positions they know that special interests will reward with large campaign contributions. By changing the incentives, you change the behavior and you orient it more to public interest policy. So that's the goal of that. Now, I want to ask a question of you. How many of you are Montgomery County residents? All right, we've got a few. All right, well, so we passed this last year in Montgomery County. Now it needs to be funded. The county executive did not propose any funding for this in this proposed budget for FY16. The budget, we need to get money in that fund, and the election applies to the elections that will take place in 2018, and it would apply to special elections before then as well. So, I want to urge you to write to the council president, and you can write to the council president at councilmember.leventhal@montgomerycountymd.gov if you are so disposed. It's L-E-V-E-N-T-H-A-L. He is the president of the county council. He is a strong supporter of this bill, and I know that he wants to get funding for it in this budget, but it would be helpful for him to hear from constituents so he can let his colleagues know that this is something that a lot of people support. And you can ask him to copy his colleagues. It's councilmember.leventhal@montgomerycountymd.gov. That is something that is coming up in the next few weeks. There are public hearings in 2 weeks. The committees will take it up. The council will pass a budget by mid-May. So that, there's urgency to that, and that's a way you can make a difference now. I applaud you for being here tonight. I applaud you for being interested in this. It's your government, and whether it is a government that's responsive to you depends on whether you are active and whether your peers and colleagues are active, because the future really is in your hands, and the public financing law works to put more power into the hands of the average person, and I believe is written in a way that is Supreme Court proof. But I'll ask the professor to comment on that at some point. Thank you all.
Questions you have and pass them to the aisles for our volunteers to collect. And in the meantime, Dan Smith and Tom Klaus will talk about two different petitions we've done.
I'm kind of curious about the questions.